Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, March 6th. A beautiful day in Southern California, though we're freezing our asses off.
Yes.
Right?
The dichotomy is outrageous.
I know, 50 degrees and we're like up in arms about the cold.
The tundra out there, people. Bring your venison carcasses and mulled wine.
I know. My God, we can't even stand it. Everybody complains, oh, it's cold, it's cold. But you know what? When the wind is blowing, it is cold.
Yeah, I felt like I was in the tundra. I am just wearing a hoodie, but still, I felt very cold.
Wow. So, coming back after the weekend, we have a great show for you. We're going to be joined by a good friend of the show in just a moment. Did you have a nice weekend, Tori? Anything
No, just
special?
Worked. No, really.
Yeah?
No.
Nothing,
I played
huh?
some darts again.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Did you ever see those darts that you actually play by kicking a ball? Like with, it's got like Velcro and stuff. It's like a huge, like you actually kick it. Like soccer.
You kick the dart?
Well,
or
look,
the ball.
They call it darts, but it's a ball and target.
Oh, cool. No, I've never seen that.
No, okay, I should have explained it differently, but...
I was like, wow, you kick the darts?
Yeah, no, not the darts themselves.
That's
There's
cool.
like a huge target, and then you get a ball like a soccer ball.
Oh, and then you kick it towards
and
it?
And you kick it towards it, then you have to hit the
I was never
bullseye.
Great with my feet.
Oh, okay. Like, but the darts, you're good, right?
Yeah, hands are much better.
Mm.
Hands, eye coordination.
So when you go to the bar and you shoot darts, do you beat people?
I got very close to beating my husband, and I was quite tipsy, which I think enhances my dart ability, to be super honest.
Or it makes you think it is.
Yes. Okay. No, but I actually was like a point away, and I was really proud of myself. Because the first time I did it, I was throwing it at like the walls and things. But this was my second time, and I was... almost to Olympic levels, I think, but it could have been the Jameson. Probably was the Jameson.
Oh, wow. So, a lot's going on in the world and stuff. I mean, God, this weekend was so full of news, huh, Tori?
I know, it's every day.
I know. Now, conspiracies and everything. I mean, what the hell would you run the country for crying out loud
I
enough?
I know. You poor thing, because every time I come in here, you're like, it's going to happen, and then it just doesn't. I know.
It doesn't happen, man.
I know. So, he did a really great job at the speech. I thought it was lovely. We talked about this, hoping it would continue.
Right.
And then
he's back,
get back
to
on Twitter.
Travel ban.
Back
and
to the Twitter.
That.
4 a.m. Twitter saying Obama wiretapped him, which isn't true.
Right.
James Clapper came out, the head of national security, said isn't true. Obama came out and said it's simply false. There's no record of it. Comey came out and said this is not true. So it looks weird, because either way he looks bad. If he were wiretapped, there would have to be probable cause, which means he's done something bad. Or if he didn't get wiretapped, why bring this up? It's very weird. So anyway...
It's to distract us? I don't know. Like, we're not distracted already.
I know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, just one thing I wanted to bring up, because this is... I was wondering what you think about this. I guess Emma Watson appeared on Vanity Fair, like, semi-clothed, really. She's got, like, this little shawl on, and it hides her nipples.
Yeah. Well, it's, to say it's like a fashion editorial. But, yeah, she's got... The boobs are out, and it's a little white crocheted, like... period piece, and it's like a fashion shoot with it, so it's very open.
Right.
Yeah.
So people are saying it's a hypocrisy because she's a feminist and all that. So what do you think? I mean, does this empower women? Or because look, it says here in 2014 she was appointed the United Nations Women Goodwill Ambassador.
Right.
That's a pretty big deal,
right? Oh, yeah. She's been a strong female role model for...
So she must have not felt it was a big deal to model that way, right?
She's already responded, and she's just like, feminism doesn't mean I have to look a certain way. It means I get to make the choice. Mm. And her choice was to, show off her body for a little bit. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I know. I didn't find anything wrong with
it.
But people
all.
Always find shit wrong with
it. Yeah, and you know what's funny about Beauty and the Beast that's coming out?
Yeah.
Everyone's so upset about the gay character. First of all, we all knew they were gay. The candle needle and the clock or whatever. People are outraged. So a movie theater in Alabama will not show the film because of the gay role, but the bestiality of the entire thing is completely fine with them.
Right.
And but she's having sex with a beast, but still, no gays. No gays. I think that's so funny.
And apparently they haven't even seen the movie yet. It's just that the director
yeah, and it's not like
promising
a gay scene.
A gay moment.
It's not Brokeback Mountain with the candlestick. It's like a moment of hilarity. And God, she's... he's got horns. That's okay, though?
I'd
that's
have
okay.
to see that first. I don't know. But you're right. In a cartoon, it's okay. But it's in real life,
it was the
makes
beast,
you wonder, right?
But it's like the whole movie is her with a beast. They're
right,
like, that
right.
part's cool.
Right.
The gay part's not.
So, but I mean, how has that been accepted
right.
as a Disney
I know,
story?
It's a very weird
time,
part of it. But,
right?
you know, Disney's weird. It's dark. I mean, you can't think of a Disney movie where the main character has two living parents. A parent always is dead
so
or dies.
Tragedy.
Very much so.
But pretty much with comic books too, right?
Yeah,
all the superheroes.
Yeah,
and stuff,
that's yeah. it. It's born from tragedy. It comes from like the Brothers Grimm, like long tail. Fairy tales are really dark.
Right.
You know, they're not like.
It is true.
And they
it
live.
True.
You know,
and you have witches.
The witches eat the kids.
And evil
yeah.
queens and yeah. I
evil
know.
Stepmothers.
Yeah, I know.
Spells. Yeah. So this one was weird. I did feel things for the beast, which is yeah. funny.
Right?
I know. I also felt very attracted to Lady and the Tramp I really liked ever
wow.
since I was a kid.
Yeah,
the dog
there
cartoon.
There you go.
Not
but,
healthy.
But that's maybe how you learned to love dogs. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
weird.
Maybe it was a result of you already loving dogs.
Yeah, it was an uncomfortable because I was like a tramp. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of young girls are like into Tramp and you're confused. He's just a cool looking dude.
I guess he is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We'll
but
move on.
So, I'm wondering why is the beast acceptable? Maybe because he looks like a person, right?
He does, and like his so embarrassing. Like his. He sounds like his voice was. He's almost like Christian Grey, right? He's super rich, a loner. He lives in this great mansion. He's got like a sexy thing going.
Right.
Like he
it's always
tame.
Like that because otherwise
yeah.
they wouldn't attract anybody.
Seriously, she has to tame the beast. Then he becomes delightful and plays in the snow. They have a dance, everything, and then he turns out to be super hot. So it's all fine in the end. But it is weird that that's just fully accepted.
I know.
Yeah.
But you haven't seen the new movie yet, right?
No, I've seen Beauty and the Beast, the original.
The original,
I was
right.
in it, and I played Lumiere, the candlestick, and I played him gay, and it was fine. He is gay.
Where? Like at a school?
At camp.
Play?
It
oh,
was summer
camp.
Yeah, but it was like he's a Frenchman who's devoted to the art of dining, and he is this flamboyant, wonderful man. He does the can-can.
Right.
I mean, come on. What are you doing? He's flaming literally.
Yeah.
Literally on
I
fire.
I guess so. I don't remember the movie, but if you say so, I can picture it in my mind.
It was, you know who it was voiced by? Jerry Orbach from Law and Order.
Oh, yeah.
And he, wonderful.
Really?
Wonderful.
Did he sound French?
Yeah, and he was bonjour.
Okay.
And he does
so
BRB. Yeah, Lumiere is like very French.
Right,
yeah.
That's right. Lumiere is the name of the candle.
Right.
Yeah.
He's flaming.
Which means light, right?
Which means
in French.
Light. Which means light.
Yeah, see, I know French pretty good.
You do.
Yeah.
Est-ce que tu parles pas le français? Oui.
Petit.
Okay.
Petit, yeah.
And that's where we'll end. Arrête. Arrête.
Yeah, you know more than me. You lived out there, right?
I did.
Yeah.
But I speak French better than Italian, but sometimes they'll just put them together and it sounds good.
That's true, right?
I'll mix them in my head.
Yeah. And many words are similar because they all come from Latin and stuff.
Yeah. Nice job on that.
Yeah.
Nice job.
Well, I know my languages, let me tell you. I may not speak them, but I know what's going on, you know.
Very nice job.
I'm a cunning linguist, let me tell you.
He loves that joke. I bet you just love that joke, don't you? I bet you use that. I love it.
I don't, but when I get a chance, it just begs for it, right?
Guns out, man. That's a good one. God, that's funny.
Most people probably don't get it, but
everyone
okay.
gets it.
Okay.
Wink, wink.
And just finally, before we get to our guest, I wanted to bring up this good news.
What?
An Air India all-female crew
make
a history with around-the-world flight.
That's so cool.
So these are the pilots and of the flight attendants, and everybody on the plane was female, except maybe the passengers, right? Yeah, this is all-female
That'd be really
crew.
Weird. It's all
right.
crew, yeah.
I know.
That's fantastic.
Like that would be called like the Lesbos flight.
Very strange flight. It's
you
all
know?
Women. No, women, this is so exciting when you see this. Or like, for instance, the Saudi Arabian women that flew the plane, but they can't drive a car.
Yeah.
Very exciting to see that.
But especially in India where, you know, sexual harassment is very common. And apparently the airline decided to do this after a lot of complaints about like groping on the planes. Oh, I mean, can you imagine, how can you sit on a plane and get away with groping a woman, you know? And
there's nowhere to go. That. I mean, people do that. There's nowhere to run away from.
And it's sort of like acceptable, so don't people don't complain about it. They sort of like accept it.
I don't think they accept it.
Well, then I don't think if women rose against it, then you would see it's still
obviously
happening.
they're standing up because they're telling the airline it's happening.
No, I know. But in India in general.
Oh, I see. I thought you meant in the airline.
The plane.
India. Yeah. I think it India is more acceptable. Yeah. I think a lot of countries where it's just.
Right. I mean, people just do that, you know. They're still like living in the 50s, you know.
Yeah. In Mexico, there's certain buses now. I was reading a story because men grope women on the buses so often that it's women only buses so they can feel safe going back from work.
Yeah.
So same issue. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think we were talking about that.
Very
once.
Interesting.
Sounds familiar to me.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's not safe being a woman, I'm telling you.
Put your dick in your pants.
Exactly. Put it back
Control
in there,
your freaking self, man.
Yeah. They don't know how to do that. Yeah?
You're not animals. I mean, I know you're animals, but you're not. You're still complicated.
Yeah, we are animals, but, you know, but hey, come
on. You're
also
men, you know.
Some of us have tried to become cultured,
manners,
too, you know.
And, Jesus.
And live in a planet where you respect other people.
That's right.
You know?
And I want to be able to feel safe, just as, like, I'm sure you wouldn't want me reaching across and touching your junk.
Exactly. Or what
you
if,
know? Or your ass.
Or what if another guy touches your mom or your daughter or something?
I mean.
Is that okay?
Right, exactly.
Right?
And, you know, in some countries where they have, like, the honor killings, if your daughter's done something and it's the family that kills them.
I
do not understand.
And they blame the victim and they kill her. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh. Well, that good news turned into
bad
news. Yeah,
the bad news. I know. Well, more good news. Natalie Portman welcomes a baby girl.
Yay.
Her name is Amalia.
Oh, that's pretty.
It is. It's pretty much a Hebrew name, if not. I mean, I've heard it on people that are not Jewish or Israeli. But I think it's pretty much a Hebrew
Amalia,
name.
Amalia, that's very pretty.
Her son was named Aleph, which is the letter A.
The letter A in
Hebrew.
Right. So she's going for the A names.
Yeah, I mean, all these celebrities, they have to have those like special names, you know?
Apple. Moses.
And, yeah. Moon Unit.
Oh, yeah.
Zappa, remember?
Yeah, Rainbow.
Yeah.
Pryor, yeah. Weird. But you know,
Northwest.
Yeah, but now they're all doing like old school, like Harold. Yeah. The old school names are coming back.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah. It's all Samuel and Clarence.
Harold is a terrible name.
Hey, there's a big Harold fan. No, I'm not. I have no idea. Harold, we love you.
All right, well, we're going to bring in our guest
Harold.
Now. There's no reason to keep him waiting any longer because he's more than a guest. He's a friend of the show.
Yes.
We're joined by Matt Polacek. Woo-hoo! Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks. You know, interesting, and you're discussing the female
all-female crew.
Right, and I went and spoke at American Airlines a couple months ago on addiction and pilots and yada, 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 and I was astounded at the lack of women in the room, and so I asked you know, the leader of the group, and he told me that nationwide, only 5 to 6% of pilots are women. And so there happens to be a, I mean, you know, we think we've come so far in so many areas as far as
it's,
you know,
rare. It's feminism. Rare to see a woman pilot.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely male dominated, but and it's taken longer for women to integrate there.
Yeah.
I think also because for many years, women were really treated like, excuse me, just like models or something on the plane, you know?
Sure.
I mean, they would only take the pretty ones and the young ones and everything. And that's what it was for. Hey, I'm getting in a plane to see some hot chicks, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's changed. It's changed, you know? But maybe because the men always viewed women in that way, that it's hard for the industry to accept women as pilots. But do you think also because there's not as many women applying to be pilots? As maybe
I'm sure the ratio is, but I do think it for some reason does feel like a male dominant. It's probably harder to get into it and promote from within.
Right.
But yeah, it's very rare, which is interesting.
Yeah, and even thinking as, you know, a young girl, you know, there's also a lot of less women in like the mechanical fields.
Yeah, the engineering and
engineering fields, and I think they all kind of line up also.
That's
true. In the same industries, and I think like, you know, you're saying when you're a young woman or young girl. There's just not a lot of role models. There's not a lot of interest.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe education in getting more services in the schools and stuff like that.
And you really need, like, it's the math, science, coding, again, for women that, like, Michelle Obama and the people are trying to get women to code more because it's a lack of women in, within the math and science that is really appalling. In other countries, it's much more equal.
So
there is something wrong sort of starting off in the base level.
But I'm wondering if we're discouraging women from going into this or they're just not interested.
I think when you don't give them the option, like if you don't give an inner city black young girl some coding and show her what you could do or some math and sciences, she's never going to be interested because you don't know about it. So,
And it makes me think, you know, being in the room and being exposed to it. It's the same thing when you talk about inner cities. You know, we look at a lot of inner city youth as not getting in the rooms with some of the higher business people and having the opportunity to practice inner, like for instance, in the NFL, you know, practice interviewing with these big CEOs and stuff. So I think, like you're saying, Tor, that being around people and getting the experience will automatically increase interest. But they're just the opportunities.
They're not exposed. Yeah, they're not really exposed
to it. Well, that's too bad. Hopefully things will change. But, you know, I keep thinking about our kids. You know, we're gonna live, you know, in the near future and everything. We're going to see the world evolve. But, you know, I'm thinking of what our kids are going to see, have in the world. Our kids and grandkids, it's going to be a very futuristic world, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're saying we're going to reach singularity in about 2030, which means that machines are going to be as smart as people. And we're going to reach the same level of intellect. And what's going to happen then?
I mean,
is it going to be a Matrix-like? Is it going to be a Terminator-like?
Do you think it's a coincidence we then found those seven Earth-like planets? No, I'm kidding. But I do think there's something to be said about, like, for instance, Elon Musk said he's going to send two space tourists to the moon. I think there will be a sense of, like, we got to get out of here in some respects. I mean, I think... And also, as we kind of disturb the planet so much in which it gets heated up, this is the first year Chicago people have never seen snow in January, February. Right. And it's just interesting. I wonder how much we can abuse without then having to go somewhere else
in the future.
Have they found places where life could be sustainable?
They just found, like last week we were talking about it, it's seven new planet-like Earth planets. That was
instead around the star.
Around a star, and it's looking hopeful. It's not super far. I mean, far, but it's not super far.
Only 40 light years away.
Right. I'll let someone else go first and tell me how it is. You know.
Is it cold? Is it chilly?
Nobody's ever going to make it. It's too long.
Hey,
you know, you have
they
to
said
hibernate.
We never go to the moon.
Like an alien, you know, you have
people
to hibernate.
Hey, we never thought we'd walk on the moon.
Yeah, that's true. We never know where we're going to get, right?
We got pictures of Pluto.
All I can tell you is all these grim science fiction movies are just making me think, why are we bringing kids into this world, man?
I mean, that's a real question that's been... I read the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Post this weekend. All three had articles about bringing children into this world.
Really?
All three.
Wow.
And I'm a 35-year-old, very, like, reproductive prime, and I'm like, do-do-do-do. Yeah, it looks like a real question.
There you go. I mean, your kids, grandkids are going to go into the next century. Your grandkids probably will.
And like, imagine if we have this sort of the coal, the oil. If the planet gets hotter, there's more environmental refugees. It's going to be chaos.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, you've got kids.
Yeah, I've got a six-year-old. And it's funny you mention that because I'm thinking, you know, with everything going on politically and everything going on. But I also feel that our quality of life is so much better than it used to be. Now, I understand the dangers with, you know, obviously the environment. But let's be honest. I mean, we all live a very nice life. We're all much more able to, you know, you look at Maslow's needs, you know, from
we can actualize ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, we're so much higher up, whereas, you know, the generation before us and before us.
That's true.
They have to worry about survival and shelter and things.
It's true.
Like
we've never been as technologically advanced. The diseases we can cure, the length of time we can live. So there's the plus side.
No, there is. Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of plus side to it. But at the same time, you're wondering, you know, are we getting too smart too quickly? And are we making machines that are going to be smarter than we are?
It's a real theoretical issue that's now like closer than ever. It's an interesting
thing. And it's going to happen this century, I think. Really, I mean, people are going to get to the point where they can save the world, you know, somehow save it from any possible disaster, but man-made at least, or they're going to destroy the whole thing.
I knew it was going wrong when we had that machine on Jeopardy.
Yeah,
when
right?
that computer Watson. Started, I was like, Watson, yeah. we got to go downhill.
I know.
If
I know.
That guy's on Jeopardy and Ken Jennings can't beat him, something's terribly wrong.
I'm telling you, you know.
Something's gone wrong.
I know. And chess, too.
Chess,
you
yeah.
know?
When you can learn yeah. chess, yeah, that's very I scary.
Know. I mean, they can just like. Looks the machines can look ahead so much more than we can.
Now you like Westworld. Can, now it's like Westworld.
Yeah, you know, yeah. all the calculations and everything. So it's a scary future. It's a very scary future. At the same time, you have to remember also if you go back in history, people always fear the future.
Yeah.
Because it's uncertain. We don't know what the hell's going to happen.
You know who doesn't? Buddhists.
Really?
That's, yeah, so the idea...
they look at it as a circle, right?
Like not only that, they become comfortable with uncertainty. And that is very hard to do. That's the goal true. Of a Buddhist.
Oh, wow.
To become comfortable with knowing it will never be comfortable.
Right, right. And I believe, you know, by design, we have the future where we have that uncertainty, which gives you freedom of choice.
And
you
hope,
know?
And hope, exactly.
Free
yep.
will.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yes, an old psychologist professor of mine once said, if you look towards the past, you become depressed. And if you look towards the future, you become anxious.
Yeah, and it's true. Right?
The more
that's
we
my
talk
life.
About it,
that is my life.
Know, I just feel more and more anxious.
That's
more,
why the Buddhists you know. Are in the present. Yeah. They like to be right in that middle.
For those of you joining us, we're talking to Matt Polacek. He's the co-host. He's part of a two-person team who hosts the show Answers for the Family. That comes on right after us here on Channel 1 on Mondays. And with Alan Cardoza. Alan couldn't make it in today. We say hi to him. Alan is a very busy man.
Yes.
Saving lost and runaway teens and things like that. You guys connected, so, I mean, you guys have been here before, but many people may not know what you do. So tell us briefly what it is that you do, Matt.
Yeah, so I am the director at the Betty Ford Center here in West LA. It's an outpatient treatment facility for people with substance abuse problems and issues. And Alan and I actually met about 15 years ago, or 10 to 15 years ago. Basically, I used to run residential treatment centers for adolescents who were depressed or run away or would self-harm. And Alan, as you know, is in the thick of it. Yeah. So he goes out, and when parents can't find children or he breaks up, you know, he's a detective by trade. And so he's gone into these, you know, these deep prostitution rings and child trafficking rings. And so we met because he would basically find these kids and deliver them to my center where, you know, he would do the hard work,
yes.
you know. And
then you would heal.
And then we would do the healing on right. our side. Right. And
which
we,
is hard enough. I mean, come on, you know. I mean, these
both,
kids got to be
so
pretty
hard.
Messed up.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's amazing, you know. The Kaiser did a study called the Adversive Childhood Experience, which to me is one of the most groundbreaking studies, and the CDC took it over. But what the study shows, which will fascinate you guys, is that children who experienced an adversive experience in their childhood, so let's say 0 to 10 years old, being traumatized, being abused, seeing a horrific something, some sort of adverse experience in their childhood, were much more likely to develop diseases, to become substance dependent, you know, to become a substance abuse user. But what we're seeing is psychological effects of early childhood have physical effects later in life.
Wow.
They die earlier, higher rates of diabetes.
I mean, pressure.
Blood pressure.
Sure.
I mean, it's mind-boggling because you think of kids as resilient, and they are resilient. But at any rate, this study's been taken over by the CDC, and it's used as a way to look at preventative medicine and preventative stuff now. So we're looking at, you know, how to get in schools and educate people now versus, you know, handling it once something's already happened.
Do you think that the sort of Betsy DeVos Trump situation with education, I can't see that they take to this very easily. Are you hopeful now? Are you worried?
No, I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I wouldn't think they'd be all progressive like that.
No, and I grew up, you know, my mom was the president of the school board in Long Beach, and I grew up in public schools, and my siblings grew up in public schools. And I do agree that, you know, the funding might not be being utilized in the best way
sure.
possible. That's not my forte. I don't know the weed to get into the weeds of it. But I do feel that every kid, you know, in our country should have the opportunity to have a great public education. And that's just not the case at all. Mm. I know we're bouncing all over the place.
That's okay. That's what the show's
about. The show's like that. We're ADD, dude. We're ADD.
Great. Because I mean, to me, that's the biggest concern is I was, you know, I grew up in Long Beach and I had the opportunity to go to a high school, Long Beach Poly, which, you know, mixed diverse school, mixed as far as talent of the, you know, the kids and but we all had the same opportunity. You know, and the teachers were there and the resources were there and they had great AP classes and great opportunities to go to colleges. I don't see that as much now. I see, you know, it's a lottery system to get into a certain school. And I think going down the road that they're looking at with the vouchers, you know, is dangerous, you know, because I feel like we put so much and we do spend a lot of money on education. So I don't think spending money, more money is the answer. I think it's just being smarter with it. And I think, you know, there's been some big pushes politically. I remember when Bush did the No Child Left Behind thing, and there's been these different kind of movements, and I think we're doing okay, but if you look at the numbers across United States versus other countries,
the world,
we're really behind. We're behind in, I mean, we're behind math. We're behind in every, you know, across the board.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? I mean, it's like it
we don't pay our teachers.
It's my
a lot of it comes from if you don't pay your teachers, that's where it starts.
But you know what? Most parts of the world, teachers are not paid a lot.
Well, in Sweden and Finland, in the Norwegians, where they're the top of the list for everything, their teachers are paid like lawyers. They're paid like doctors.
How is that possible?
Because their tax system is so high. But they are paid very, very well. And in those places, the education goes way, way up.
Right. Except that we're leading in everything. So how is that possible?
We're not, but we're not. Like in math, we're like...
No, but in economy and technology and, you know, and a lot of things we're leading as a country. But I'll tell you what happens is that we allow people to come here and they study and then we ask them to leave and go back. So they take all this talent and all the stuff they learn here, they take back to their countries. And then they have like great engineers and great this, but they learn it here, you know. And what I'm saying is we do have a good system. I just think we're not getting the kids connected to the education
system.
Yeah,
there's some stopgap that's not
there
working.
Is,
connecting,
you know?
That's not working.
Also, what about where's the ownership of the parent?
Right.
You know, and what's the role? I mean, we still as parents are in front of our kids more than anybody else. We have the opportunity to model appropriate, you know, behavior from school to anything. And I don't know that, you know, I spend my weekends doing a lot of reading, and one of the things I'm kind of looking at is our culture of kind of individualistic versus collective, you know, the Eastern cultures. And we're less likely to kind of be more collective and bringing kids up in neighborhoods and all. You know, when I grew up, you were out in the light till the lights turned dark and then you ran inside. Right. But every parent on that block was a parent to you and to the other
kids. You could go to any house.
You can go to any house, you know. Whereas now I think people are so isolated and so self-focused that, you know, there's not as many parents picking up other kids in their neighborhood and supporting them. And, you know, it was a collective
community based,
whereas now I feel it's so individual and so isolated.
Yeah.
Right. We have a phone call. Let's go ahead and take that. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, people. This is Casey.
Casey, good morning to you. Casey's our correspondent downstairs.
That's a great one. I like that.
My man.
Casey likes to always give us his input. So, Casey, what exactly we were talking about? A million things in the first 10 minutes of the show. What would you like to comment on?
Well, I agree with Matthew a lot. I think a lot of the ownership has to go to the parents. I think too many parents don't present education as a way out for most kids. They always say music or sports or, you know, they stress those other aspects first. When those are some of the hardest things to break into. Mm-hmm. When you have education every day and, you know, something you could, you know, you could capitalize on. A lot of kids, you know, like I spend a lot of time with the kids in the parks, like I tell you all the time, Sam. I go to the park and I try to talk to these kids and let them know there's other ways. But they just... In their mind, school is not the priority. I mean, they'll find they give you 10 other excuses before they try to capitalize on school.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't really need more money towards, like Sam is like Matthew said, we need to just allocate it better into better things, you know.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead, Tori.
No, when education is seen as like the priority in terms of like the money we put into it, in terms of paying the teachers, and then the parents take it as a priority, then it transfers to the kids.
Right.
And but right now it's like, yeah, it's just not that way.
I do insist, though, it comes from the parents, I think, and it comes from the culture at the same time, you know, because let me tell you, for example, okay, we can make generalizations sometimes and things, but I think in the culture of Jewish people, for example, okay, education is very important.
It's a priority.
And I think you talk, it is a priority. And I'm just saying Jewish people because that's what I'm familiar with. But I would venture to say that in Asia, you know, many parents also...
Education is a high priority.
Education is very high because they know that's the key to survival of a people. You have to know what the hell's going on.
But you also have to have resources. So, like, if you don't have the resources for education, then it's not going to be a priority.
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
That's true, yeah.
So but it's only fair to say when you have those options, you know?
Right. Yeah, which many...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, me being from a Jamaican culture, education was very stressed, very hard. Like,
right.
So when I came to the States as a child, I was bypassing kids around my age, and I just couldn't understand how they wouldn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when I came to the States, American kids were just want. It was all about recess.
Yeah.
When I in Jamaica, I don't remember recess. I just remember we went to school, then whatever athletic program you're in, like, you know, if you go to a prep school, you're either going to be in a track program or you're going to be in a, or it's just called the football program, soccer program at the time, and I was in the track program, so. The government funded programs that went along with school. So if you're in school, you had to have some type of extracurricular event. You couldn't just go to school and be a student, even though school was very competitive. They expected you to fall off to something else. So either kids were either playing running track or playing soccer. So that was our only options, that and school. Where in the United States, kids, when I came here, kids wanted to be artists. People wanted to be singers and all these other things. I was like, wow, we didn't have these opportunities. I'm not saying those are distractions, but I'm just saying... Yeah. When parents are saying, like, I want her to be a beauty queen, I want him to be a football star, then school gets pushed to the back.
But,
and that's one thing I noticed coming to the United States culture as a child.
But, Casey, your family, you didn't have a choice. School was going to be, and that's from the parents, right? I mean, and you're growing up, Casey, you didn't have a choice. You were going to school.
Oh, yeah, I had no choice.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
There was no choice.
And that's the parents.
It was just something, there was just something embedded in us, you know, and then we would hear stuff as a, you know, you're, cousin is already a doctor at 18, you know. I was like, what cousin is this? So it was always stuff like that, you know, with always pressure.
Well, it sounds like my Jewish mother. And it's so similar.
Oh, my God. And then my friends used to trip because to be eligible in sports, you had to have a 2.0. In my house, we had to have a 3.0.
Wow,
so
cool.
Everybody could not understand. How,
that's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, so it was just, I don't want to blame the system, but it just seems like we're not prioritizing education as a whole.
Yeah,
that's true. But I think it's a whole thing about parenting too. I think there's a big problem with parenting today in this country, and I'm seeing it all the time. And you can see in this generation, the new generation, the teens and the in their early 20s. What's that like? The not the millennials, but they're already called like something else. Generation whatever.
That's probably their name. Generation whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The ones that were born in the
swipe left, swipe right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
the past 20, 30 years. It's like they're so spoiled. They have so much
with kids.
Yeah. You know, so much entitlement, you know, helicopter parents, but nothing comes out of it. You know, we parent by guilt. We parent by, you know, feeling we owe our kids something. We need to give them everything they want right now. And it's terrible.
What's interesting, though, the good news is that the youth that they've been studied that I've read about are incredibly much more inclusive about race, inclusive about religion, inclusive about sexual orientation, very interested more in technology, much more secular based, much more pacifist, including anti-war. So there is stuff to look forward to. You do see a huge, and not just on the coasts. This is in the middle of the country. The youth coming up are incredibly more open to diversity, which I think gives us some hope.
Yeah, that's very true.
So, and to be honest, that's where you got the Bernie Sanders, and that's where you got the energy. So I am looking forward to that group of kids. I just want them to know the patience isn't there, where it's like they want it right now. But guess what? They're going to be making things that happen right then. So
yeah, but you know what? what? They're gonna grow up and be adults, and unless they are consciously going to change, they'll still view the world in that perspective.
But I think the world will become that. I think it'll become faster and faster and faster.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. There's no doubt there. You know, just the question is how this whole thing is gonna, pan out. I don't know.
Yeah, but I do have hope because of the studies that show they want the old war hawks to die out. I mean, that's really what the youth is very much a pacifistic, more diverse, secular group. So it's going to be an interesting change.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so that's the situation. So enough with serious talk and stuff. Casey, what's going on, man?
Yeah, boobs.
Yeah, boobs, dude.
You didn't say boobs.
Yeah, trying to make it lighter. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Throw the words.
I appreciate Matthew. I appreciate people who give back to the kids. You know, I'm always a fan of people like that. So I just want to call in and
Matt is awesome. Matt is an awesome man. I wish upon everybody to meet him in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Very cool guy.
Thanks, Casey. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, I gotta get go.
Okay. Thank you for calling in.
All right.
Bye. Wow. So a lot of interesting stuff going on. I wanted to, by the way, after this show, we were invited, I don't know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but at any rate, I'm going to be on Table for Five after the show, and so catch me there. They were, Annette and Felicia were here last Monday. We had a blast, so then they're like, we're going to turn the table on you, and, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
Table for Five.
Yeah.
So they'll be cool, and... So you can listen to that, I guess I'll be competing with Matt in the next hour. Good thing we have archives.
We're doing Table for Six.
We'll just break down the wall between the studios and we'll do it together. So that'll be awesome.
The great part is on LA Talk Radio, you just go on the website and you can click and rewatch them.
Or switch between us,
Yeah, just go mono.
Just alternate.
Stereo.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoever runs this place is pretty smart, so.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. So, let's see, what else? These two women, you got to hear this. Like, they're like twins. They're two sisters.
Oh, I heard about
the 97-year-old one.
Yes, this is Craig Ray.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they fell. They both fell. Like one of them fell.
So one fell outside.
Outside.
And the other one ran back in.
And it was like icy or something. Right.
And one ran back in to tell or help and fell
to get
inside.
Help. And she fell inside like tripping on a rug.
And they both passed.
And they. So people are saying they were exposed to the cold. They probably froze to death.
I know you probably thought this was a better ending, Matt. It's right? It's really dark.
Really happy, positive show you guys got.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's where you go, I mean, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad.
It's crazy,
you have to decide
though.
What you want to do.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the, there was a cheerleader. This is one of the, I shouldn't say funny because it's dark, I guess, in a small way. There was a cheerleader at the Arizona basketball game a couple weeks ago that fell as she.
Think they're going to fall.
But this is unreal. She falls and then the guy picks her up to carry her off and he falls. They both fall.
Oh,
so
God.
She fell twice.
Oh, God.
In like
That's
a,
like when you have an ambulance and the stretcher falls once you put the guy on it. It's so sad.
Unbelievable.
Oh,
but
God.
You have to look that up.
God, that's
it's the funniest. I mean, I shouldn't say funny.
No, it's terrible. Yeah. Is she all right? Hopefully
she was fine. She was fine. But just the video of watching her fall twice in 20 seconds is,
right. Just imagine a few years ago, we didn't see this stuff because there was no YouTube. There was no social media, I mean, now there's just so much for your eyes to feast on,
We
start accepting things as okay, People fall. People have accidents.
But people love
experience.
Laughing. And people falling
since
the beginning of time.
Right.
Honestly, a Neanderthal fall be like, ho ho, dork
true,
fall.
Right?
Like, that's got to be
the
funny.
Banana peel.
The banana peel, the Charlie Chaplin effect, everything is falling down. People love it.
Yeah.
I always think, when I was 16 or 17, I look back at videos or pictures and I'm so embarrassed of the way I talked and act. Now there's a record of everything for these poor kids who, as they went up and said things or did things.
There's no one going to be alone.
It's there and it's registered. And
I also just don't like knowing, when I was little, I was like boy crazy. And I can't imagine knowing what the boys are doing at all moments of time.
Well,
there was times when I'd be like, oh, I miss Jordan. But I'd be like watching... I'd have to like busy myself with schoolwork and stuff. But now I could find out exactly what he's doing, where he is,
or who.
Oh my God, the worst. So crazy. That's, I mean, that's got to be way more stressful.
You know, our privacy is so exposed. You know, because we get everything for free, but essentially we're giving up our privacy, our personal information. Every time you're getting something for free, you're doing exactly that. And you know, we're out there. You know, so again, you know, we're being watched. You know, everywhere we're being monitored.
Obama's listening to us.
I was going to say he's wiretapping everyone.
Wiretapping the hell out of this station
because we matter. Because we matter.
But at any rate. Yeah, so, you know.
I know. Everyone's paranoid because it's kind of true. But, yeah, it's a weird life we live. Yeah. Where you can just, what's funny is in real time, like the idea of Foursquare, is that what it's called? Yeah, where you would check in. I'm always like, so now I need to know that, like, Marla got muffins in the morning. Like, that's weird to me that that's, like, important to people, to know where your friends are.
It is, now you can do it on Facebook and people do it all the time.
Very strange.
And the question is, why would you do it while you're there? I mean,
what do you have the impetus to do?
Especially when people say, I'm going on vacation, it's like, oh, tell the whole world your house is going to be empty now, so someone can break into your home, you know?
Like, I don't get, I get checking into, like, let's say I go to India, I'm going to the Taj Mahal, I'm going to check in and be like, I mean, I'm going to say something, because that's cool. But to get chicken wings, do I need other people to know? It's
That's
just
true,
weird.
Right?
What is it about? I mean, as, I'm
right,
as a psychologist,
exactly.
I'm thinking, you know, it's not on the lines of like a narcissist.
Is it a safety thing? Is it a
It's not along
a trendy
the line
thing?
Of a narcissist.
I mean,
don't think, I
mean,
I think it is.
I mean, selfies, you
I think
know,
it is.
We used to not tolerate the first people that would do selfies. Yeah. We're like, look how narcissistic it is.
Yeah.
Now we're doing it.
The
and
selfie
it's
stick,
acceptable.
Now, yeah, I think it is a narcissistic
But it is
thing.
A narcissistic thing because you build it. Look, and on one hand, we can say you're building your brand, okay?
Sure.
And nobody else is going to bring you build your brand like you can. Okay, granted. But at the same time, you know, you got to be like, okay, I, you know, maybe people don't care about what I look like to myself, you know? And, you know, why do I think people want to see me all the time?
As you say that, I'm thinking about this study I read just a couple weekends ago about self-esteem. And the study was done about a year ago, and it was saying that people's self-esteem is now, and there's a big shift in this, is much more prone now to cultural response than to yourself.
So it's like likes and stuff.
Yeah.
So followers. Yeah.
If 90 people love that you got those muffins,
why wouldn't
you feel good?
And
right?
I will say this, to be honest, I am trying to build a brand, and when I post a picture of myself, way more likes.
Yeah.
Way more exposure.
And dogs too,
but
right?
Mostly, like, if I put a picture of me looking pretty sexy and good, the most likes I'll get.
Good. So that's what you got
to
do.
I know, but then that brings you right back to being a narcissist where all I'm doing is taking pictures of myself because I am getting a positive, literally, the currency is coming in saying I'm winning from this.
Right.
So I'm like...
But what do you care if you have the gift to be able to draw followers to you? Then put pretty pictures of yourself with all the memes that you like to put
up. And that's what
there.
I do. And that's what I do. But it's just, it's a funny thing because I can stand back and say, okay, I see that this is narcissistic, but I got to still do it.
Right.
I mean, I chose a profession that is narcissistic,
that's
you know?
That's true. No,
it's just me talking out loud. So, yeah.
Absolutely. It's just that I think those social networks have amplified everything we do, you know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like you're sort of like standing on the street corner with a big amplifier and shouting so everybody can hear, you know.
But now everyone's shouting, so everyone's screaming at each other.
I know.
Well, where do we draw the line of, you know, is this clinically, like, does this person have an issue? You know, I mean, are they posting selfies every day? Are they reporting every single... Because if they're getting the feedback, like you're saying, and they're getting the likes, and they're getting people to want to talk with them, they're going to keep doing it.
Of course, why wouldn't
you? It's being reinforced.
Exactly. Why? And to be honest, you can make a business out of it. I mean, that is the basis of the Kardashian universe, which, you know, I really am very enamored by, because they saw the currency as actually... They made it into actual money. They monetarily used likes. That's how they did it. So they did it the right way. It's just how far does this take us and what does it do to us?
Yeah,
so that's true, you know. But some people live and die by those numbers, by those followers and likes and stuff.
You see these people committing suicide too, like teenagers. And
really?
It's a lot of it to do with social media.
Yeah.
But there's a question that's come up now to the Supreme Court. Do sexual offenders in jail, once they come out, have a right to social media? is it a First Amendment right to be able to post on social media, or is it something else? And that's
like
now with
the privilege or something.
Exactly. So, as if you're a registered sex offender, what your theory? It's going to the Supreme Court. Will you be able to take that First Amendment back and be able to write or not? Yeah. And I think that's a fascinating question.
Because, yeah, it's like your presence, already your presence is known in the public physically. Now it's like virtually in
and do you
online.
Have that,
I mean,
right,
do,
but
do you have the same access?
Exactly. And do you have the same rights?
Right.
Exactly. Like you do, you can't vote anymore, but you can, do you have that right?
Well, the question is, I guess, do you accept that once a person did their time, they paid?
Now that's the question.
They paid back.
That's what the Supreme Court answered.
But here's what confounds that argument is that we as psychologists are doing a very poor job with
rehabilitation.
That population.
That's right.
Really?
And the rehabilitation on sexual offenders is not good statistically.
Right. Wow.
And so certain things we do a great job of, you know, but with that area, the percentages and the outcomes and the studies are not good.
Well, why do you think that is? People don't want to deal
stigma,
with that?
Stigma, I bet.
I think it's stigma. And I think...
But scientists, you know, I mean, to study this, to help this.
But when you to get in, you wouldn't get a lot of funding if you're like, I'm going to help registered sex offenders. That's hard to get money for.
Think about like addiction, for instance. You know, my world is, you know, it took a while for it to be destigmatized, right?
That's true.
And one of the best treatment modalities for addiction is having a community and having a, you know, recovery community to help support you and work through things and a place to talk. Well, with sexual offenders, you know, that's a tough thing. They have support groups. In fact, someone came to me once and asked, you know, if I would be part of you know, a sexual offender support group. And my first initial reaction was, my skin crawled.
Yes.
You know, but this is a disease too that people have. And I ended up not doing it for multiple reasons. But then I'm also contributing to the problem then. Because once again, this population
gets ignored.
It gets ignored.
Stigma, right.
Yeah. And if it's a
nobody
disease.
Nobody fighting or advocating for them.
No, right. And these are people who are probably abused. I mean, most likely statistically abused as kids. And so it's a cycle. And, you know, it's like, and there's no one. And I'm not the dude to spend the show,
justifying
it.
Of course not.
But at the same time, you know, it's sad because we're not, you know, we've got a very small population helping this population. And our resources and allocations are not going towards it.
Right. Yeah, it raises a question. You know, raises another priority question.
Yeah,
exactly.
You see, I don't think you're really justifying them or helping them. I think we're helping society by rehabilitating these people. Because if not,
then you're just left with them.
They're going to be out there again. You know, so they might as well, if they already paid the price to society and now they're out there, maybe it is the answer to reach out to them and try to rehabilitate them rather than to stigmatize them and probably push them to do it again.
Yeah, but if it's a parent, let's say like a new parent or as a parent yourself, like if you have kids that are young, do you want to have potential sexual offenders on your social media?
I know.
But then again, are you then going unconstitutionally taking away some rights? So it's very blurry.
And I mean, I know when I lived in Northridge, which is not too far from here, I would say this was like maybe 15 years ago, they passed around those flyers at our apartment building saying that some sexual offender is living in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was worried.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural reaction, right?
Of course.
I mean,
it's a natural. It's like you feel it's like a monster among you.
Yeah. And then that's how they, I mean, obviously they are. I mean, but that's how then they get more isolated.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but what I'm saying is I agree with Matt that I think the answer is always
rehab.
Treatment and rehab. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get these people in, you know. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. A couple more minutes, I guess. I don't want to keep you here too long because you have a show to prepare for too. So we might as well just do all the promotions. Tell people how they can find you, Matt.
Oh, yeah. We're Betty Ford Center is in West L.A., 10700 Santa Monica Boulevard. And you can always call me if you're interested or worried about a loved one. You can call my cell phone directly at 562-225-4093. The Betty Ford Center is in network with all major insurance companies. And the best part about being in West LA is we've got programs that are in the evening or during the day, so you could still do your work and continue your life. And if you do need a higher level of care, we obviously have the Betty Ford Center in Rancho Mirage, which would be more of an inpatient setting.
Right.
But either way, even if you're curious about a loved one or, you know, just have some questions, you're always welcome to call me. And
yeah, I mean, think about it. You know, when you're like like really depressed and into drugs or whatever you're into right now, just think. I mean, look, Matt's got like a soothing voice. He's got a soothing personality. He's going to listen to you. What have you got to lose, man? You know, just contact him. So give the number, your number.
Yeah, it's 562-225-4093. And, yeah, give me a call and hopefully we can help
man.
You.
There's people out there willing to help all the time.
Absolutely.
And stay tuned for Answers for the Family right after us with Matt and Alan Cardoza. And that's it. And if you want to also listen to fun stuff, tune into Table for Five. You don't have to do it live. You can go after the show and listen to some more schmoozing on my part.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, guys. It's good seeing you.
Of course. We love having you, Matt. And thanks for helping all these people. You're amazing.
Absolutely.
And we always love having you here.
Love being here. Thank you.
Awesome. Tori, thanks as always.
Anytime.
Oh, you got the hoodie thing on
now. I'm freezing.
In here? Just wait till you're outside.
I know.
All right, everybody, stay warm and we'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.